right. So today we're going to dive deep into the story of Jacob.
Oh, Jacob.
Yeah. You know, the wrestling with the angel, the whole.
Right.
Yeah. So we're looking at excerpts from a lecture by Dr. Kenneth Matthews.
Right.
And focusing on Genesis chapters 29 through 31.
Okay. So that's his time in Paddan Aram.
Yeah. His time in Paddan Aram. And, you know, it's got everything. Family drama.
Oh, yeah.
Tricky deals. Ancient customs.
Even a little sheep breeding in there.
Right. Yeah. We got sheep breeding. But what's really fascinating is what this story shows us about God, his character, and his faithfulness, even when the people he chooses kind of mess things up a little bit.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a wild ride for sure, you know, because Jacob's on the run from his brother Esau after that whole stolen blessing incident.
Right.
And so he ends up, you know, seeking refuge with his uncle Laban in Paddan Aram.
Right.
But it's almost like he's going from the, you know, out of the frying pan into the fire.
It's true. It really does feel that way. And I like how these chapters begin and end with Jacob on the run.
Right.
I mean, he starts out running from Esau, and by the end, he's running from Laban.
Well, that's right.
So do you think there's a connection between the way that, you know, earlier in Genesis, we see Jacob deceiving his father Isaac?
Right.
And now Laban is kind of doing the same thing to him?
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's almost like a mirror image kind of poetic justice, you know?
Oh, interesting.
The deception comes full circle. So Laban tricks Jacob by switching Leah for Rachel.
Oh, right. On their wedding night.
On their wedding night.
Wow.
And then he changes Jacob's wages 10 times.
10 times. You'd think that would leave him completely destitute.
Yeah, you would think. But, you know, the lecture points out that Jacob still prospers.
He does.
Yeah.
How, why?
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because it almost seems counterintuitive, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But I think it's a subtle way of showing us that God is working things out, you know, even in all this mess.
Yeah. Fulfilling his promises.
Yeah. Yeah. Fulfilling his promises. Yeah.
Yeah. It reminds us that, you know, God's plans aren't always thwarted by human failings.
They're not.
And speaking of messy circumstances, we got to talk about Leah and Rachel.
The wives.
The wives.
Yes.
It's a pretty intense situation.
It is. Well, you got to remember that in this society, a woman's value was often tied to her ability to bear sons.
Right.
The lecture actually quotes Rachel.
Oh, does it?
And she's pleading with Jacob. She says, "Give me children or I'll die."
Wow.
Yeah, it's powerful.
Yeah, you can really feel that pressure. And, you know, it's no wonder they're trying to kind of take matters into their own hands.
Right.
I mean, Leah and Rachel, they both offer their maidservants to Jacob.
To bear children for them.
And then Rachel even tries those mandrakes.
Right. She thought they were like an aphrodisiac.
Yeah, that'll help.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're really...
They're trying to control the situation.
Manipulating.
Manipulating.
Yeah. But here's what I find fascinating.
What's that?
Even as they're doing all of this scheming, both women seem to acknowledge...
They do.
God's control.
God's ultimate control over...
Over fertility.
Fertility.
They understand that they're not totally in control.
That's right. It's a good reminder for all of us, you know?
It is. It is. Even when we try to force things, God is ultimately the one in charge.
He is.
Okay, so we've got Jacob caught between these two wives, but then there's another layer to the story.
Okay.
His growing wealth.
Oh, yeah, the flocks and the herds.
He makes this deal with Laban about taking the speckled and spotted sheep as wages.
Right.
And then he uses striped branches
to influence the breeding of the sheep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a little bizarre.
It is a little strange, but
it worked.
It worked. And you know, that detail about the striped branches, it's not just some random quirky thing.
Right.
It actually gives us insight into how people viewed the natural world back then.
Right.
And their ability to manipulate it.
Right. But I mean, this success doesn't go unnoticed.
No, it doesn't.
Laban sees his nephew getting wealthier.
That's right.
And things start to go south.
Yeah, their relationship really starts to sour.
Yeah, jealousy.
Jealousy, uh-huh.
The green-eyed monster.
Yeah, there it is.
What I find interesting is that this tension stemming from Jacob's wealth, it kind of echoes similar situations we see with Abraham and Isaac earlier.
Right, you see this pattern throughout Genesis.
Yeah, it does seem to be a recurring theme. Do you think?
Absolutely. And I think it begs the question, can true contentment really exist alongside material wealth?
Ooh, that's a good one. And what does that tell us about human nature?
Yeah, yeah. And more importantly, how does God work within all these tensions?
Those are great questions. It's like this story is making us look at some hard truths about ourselves.
I think so. And this brings us to a really pivotal moment.
Okay.
God's direct intervention.
Now, this is where it gets really interesting.
Indeed, divine intervention tends to do that.
And he speaks to both Jacob and Laban through dreams.
Their dreams, right?
I think it's easy to forget how important those were back then.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that was how God communicated.
It was the main way, yeah.
It wasn't like, you know, he could just send a text or...
Right, call up on the... Yeah.
Yeah, call up on the iPhone.
It makes you wonder if maybe we're missing out on something today, you know?
It really does. You're making me rethink all those late night pizza cravings.
Yeah.
But in this case, God warns Laban in a dream not to harm Jacob.
Right.
Can you imagine waking up from that?
Oh, I'd be terrified.
And then there's that part about Rachel.
Stealing her father's idols?
The asshole gods, yeah.
Yeah, what do you make of that?
That part always throws me off. It seems so out of character for her.
Right.
Especially after, you know, we hear her crying out to God for children.
Right, right.
Why would she steal these idols?
Well, it's important to remember that these household gods weren't exactly the same as what we think of as idols today.
Okay.
In their culture, they were often tied to family protection,
okay,
inheritance rights, things like that.
Oh, okay.
So Rachel may have thought that taking them would somehow secure her future.
Oh, interesting.
Or give her some sort of advantage over her sister.
So it's not really about false gods.
Right, not necessarily.
It's about power and security.
Exactly.
Interesting. Yeah, it definitely adds like another layer.
It does. It does. And, you know, we don't actually see the consequences of this right away.
Right. It feels like one of those things that's going to come back later.
Chekhov's household gods.
Yeah, exactly. But before we get to that... There's this whole showdown between Laban and Jacob.
Oh, yeah. It's a big confrontation.
And it reminds me of that confrontation in the Garden of Eden.
I see what you mean. Yeah. God. It's another interesting parallel, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like just as God confronted Adam and Eve after they disobeyed, we see this tension.
Right.
This accountability between Laban and Jacob.
That's right.
And yet in the middle of all of this, they managed to establish a peace treaty. They build this stone pillar, a heap of stones. They make an oath.
Covenant meal. Yeah. Yeah. Covenant meal. It's like the ancient version of signing a contract and then going out to dinner.
I love those tangible details.
Yeah.
You know, it makes the story come alive.
It makes it real. Yeah.
But there's one detail that Dr. Matthews points out.
Okay.
They make this treaty in the name of the fear of Isaac.
The fear of Isaac. What does that even mean?
Yeah. It's a phrase that needs a little unpacking.
Were they afraid of Isaac?
No, not exactly. You have to remember that Isaac was known for his reverence for God.
Oh, okay.
So this fear of Isaac isn't about being afraid of Isaac himself.
Okay.
It's about recognizing the awe-inspiring nature of the God Isaac worshipped.
Oh, I see.
And the covenant he established with the patriarchs.
Okay, yeah, that makes more sense. So it's like, even though it's Jacob and Laban who are there.
Right.
They're calling on the legacy, the faithfulness of their ancestors.
Exactly. And that's one of the main things I want to highlight here.
Okay.
This isn't just some family drama, you know. This is about God's sovereignty, his faithfulness, how he's working out his purposes.
Even in these difficult situations.
Yeah, and in the messy stuff.
So all this drama.
Yeah.
All this intrigue, it's pointing to something bigger.
It is.
Something that's still important for us today.
Yeah.
But what does that mean for us?
Yeah, that's the question, isn't it?
Why should we care about, you know, this ancient story?
Well, I think for one thing, it's a reminder that we all face challenges.
Right.
Just like Jacob. We make mistakes.
We run from problems.
We run from problems. We get ourselves into tricky situations.
Let's make bad decisions.
We make decisions we regret. But here's the good news.
Okay.
God can use those experiences.
I like that.
Well, good.
It's like God doesn't waste a hurt.
He doesn't.
You know, he's working behind the scenes even when we mess up.
Right. He's weaving it all together.
It's a message of hope.
Absolutely.
And redemption.
Hope and redemption.
Yeah. It's good to know that we're not disqualified, you know, even when we make the big mistakes.
Right. Exactly.
But I think it's hard to sometimes see that bigger picture.
Oh, it is.
When you're in the middle of it all.
When you're in the thick of it. Yeah. We get so focused on the day to day.
Yeah. The little things, the dramas.
Right. We miss the bigger picture.
And this story is kind of inviting us to do that, right?
Yeah.
To step back and see how God is working.
Absolutely. To look for his hand in all of it.
Yeah. Even when it's not obvious.
Even when it's not obvious. Even when things are messy.
Like we're so focused on the threads that we forget to look at the whole tapestry.
Right.
And I think in this tapestry, we see God's faithfulness woven throughout.
Absolutely.
Like even when Jacob is, you know, running for his life, scheming,
yeah,
making all these choices that, you know, we might question.
Questionable choices, yeah.
God is still working out. his promise to Abraham.
That's right. His covenant with Abraham is still in motion.
Yeah, it's powerful.
It is. God's plans are bigger than our choices.
So it's easy to get discouraged.
Yeah, it is.
But this story shows us that God can redeem any mistake.
He can. He can.
And use it for good.
Absolutely. You know, it's never a matter of if God is faithful. It's how he's going to show us his faithfulness.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. So as we wrap up our deep dive into Jacob and Laban,
okay,
what's one thing you hope our listeners will take away from this?
I think if I could boil it down to one thing, it's that God is trustworthy.
Even when we're not.
Even when we're not. His faithfulness depends on his character, not on us.
It's a good truth. A good truth. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as you go about your day,
yeah,
maybe think about how are you seeing God's faithfulness at work in your own life?
Oh, that's good. Even when things are messy and you're not sure what's going on.
Yeah. What evidence can you see of his presence?
Right. It might be small, a little whisper or a moment of unexpected grace.
Keep your eyes open.
Keep your eyes open. Be looking for it.
Yeah, you might be surprised by what you find.
That's right.
Well, that's our deep dive into the world of Jacob and Laban. We've seen family feuds, divine interventions, and some lessons about God.
Timeless lessons.
That still apply to us.
Still speak to us today. Yeah.
So keep exploring, keep questioning, keep diving deep.
Yeah, don't stop searching.
Into this incredible story. And we'll see you next time.